I gotta say, as someone that's a part of a secret society, it's real frustrating when you're in an age-long conflict with another secret society, and they have people dressing up in silly costumes and breaking into your house, and then you're fucking hunting them with crossbows as a child in the middle of the Northern California woods, and then you find out everything you know is just a
Right?
simulation. Some heavy shit. We're talking about Assassin's Creed and Arcadia. It is our Dan Waters and Alex Pacnadil double feature. As always, I am Michael, or as most people know me, Poet Air, and I am joined with my two platonic life
This
partners,
your simulated friend, Chaz Simon.
and synesthetic. All right, so I want to say, going into like what you were mentioning about the silly costumes, I like how they actually state how silly the costumes are in the books. I think they even
We're
call.
jumping ahead, but the Black Cross costume's the silliest shit I've
Oh,
ever seen in
it's
my entire
awesome
life.
though. It's so silly. No, but I like it's awesomely silly. It's
it?
totally over the top and ridiculous. It's awe-invoking. I use the traditional sense, if nothing else.
Awe
It
invoking.
invokes awe in how ridiculous it is. And the white hoods, I like how they ref there's one line that's like, what do you call those white hoods? Sniper bait? It's like, who, what the fuck assassin sneaks around in like all white?
Was that guy that dressed up for him to throw people off his scent, his lover? I was very confused.
Wait,
Do you
what?
guys remember? Because Otso is the Black Cross, the guy that's a part of the Knights
Yes.
Templar, and they're having that
Oh,
meeting.
yeah.
He doesn't want people to know he is the Black Cross, so he has that guy whose name I'm looking up because I don't remember.
He's
That's always
not in
like
a
kind of
lot. He's in a few
hanging
scenes.
out in his quarters and like coming in, and they're like having small conversations.
To lead
I
them
was
to big romance.
Andre was Andre his
Oh
lover? I
yeah.
was
They
very.
might just be he might be his Alfred, he might be his lover, he might be both.
I mean, in a perfect world, Alfred would have been both, but that's not
Yeah,
the way the chips
maybe
fell for
he
Bruce.
is. We just don't know. Bruce could be putting
Yeah.
on a front with all the ladies, you know?
Can I confess something to you both and also to our entire audience?
No, sorry.
Assassin's Creed is one of those big franchises that I want to like so much about, and I can't. I don't know what it is about it. I just can't do it. You know what I
I
mean?
gotta tell you, I loved Assassin's Creed 1 and
I
2 when they came out. I kind of haven't really been
gotta
in the Assassin's Creed universe except for this series, which is enjoyable. And then I tried to play another Assassin's Creed game recently that my sister bought, and we ended up having to, we were like sharing the save because it ended up becoming like a giant tutorial that lasted the entire game, and had to like put it down by the end because
Yep.
it's just every single mission is a giant tutorial.
I must admit that I, like Chaz, have had issues getting into the Assassin's Creed
The
game.
first
Like,
two are
when it came out,
awesome.
I was super pumped because I was like, this involves some kind of
It's
simulation.
cool.
That's
There's a sci-fi
cool.
element.
And then,
Okay,
like,
I'm in.
yeah, sci-fi element. Like, yeah, exactly. You die and you have, like, cardiac arrest and wake
Hey.
up somewhere else, especially the first game, because no one knew
Yeah.
anything about the story yet. So you're like, what's going on? And then, like, my neighbor, so when the first game came out, I was like 20, in my early 20s, like 21 around that age. I lived in Hollywood and I lived in a small apartment building off Cahuenga. And the guy I used to get pot with used to be my pot hookup. Like, I didn't buy pot from him, but he knew where the
Right.
pot was.
The
And so
plug for
I
the
would, like, he
plug.
would get my
He's your
pot. Yeah, he was my plug for the plug.
guy.
So I would, like, have to go over there and hang out with him. I mean, he was cool. I enjoyed hanging out with him. He was definitely more of, like, of all my friends, I lived there. All went to the Music Institute on Hollywood Boulevard. So he was like another guy that went to the Music Institute. But my other friends are more like hippie music. He was definitely like a death metal guy. So one, he didn't really like my friends I hung out with because he thought they were hippie squares. And so he really only hung out with me. And I mean, I looked like some hipster fool. So I don't know why he thought I was any better. I was just trying to look like trendy. And I would go over there, and we would smoke weed, and he would play Assassin's Creed for like 7 hours straight. And he would try to get me into Assassin's Creed because he literally thought this was the best game he's ever played his entire life. And I hated the controls. I'd play for like 5 minutes and be like, I just can't. I can't. I should love this, but it's so hard to control this character. And the fighting in the first game, I will say, is one of the worst fighting systems I've ever had in my entire life. Like, it wasn't fun.
You had to do like a secret move. You had to do an assassination.
You had to do a secret move. You couldn't just cut someone. Yeah. If you tried to fight them, they would just block you, and you'd be sitting there fighting some random dipshit for 40 minutes next to some goddamn Venice waterway or wherever the first one was set, and it was just not for me. That being said, the second game, my friend, one of my best friends of my entire life, another person I smoked weed with.
Weed
in Assassin's Creed.
Well, Assassin's
he was
weed.
The first person I ever smoked weed with, but this was back in the Bay Area. I went over his house, we smoked some weed, and he was finishing the second game. And the second game has like this mind-blowing ending. And I really had no idea what was going on, but he was like blown to tears. Like, he was like so moved by this crazy ending that I was like, shit, I must just not get this. Because like, look at him. He's fucking crying. I was like, there's something in this game that I just don't get. And so then, like, I tried the pirate one because my same friend, Mike, got all the games. So then when the pirate one came out, I played that one.
Like,
and
that
I thought
BioShock
it was cool
2 ending?
Ship.
Yeah.
Or BioShock Infinite ending?
Yeah, that game we're not going to bring up because that game has a lot of, like, people do not like that game as much as you think. There's
BioShock
a lot of,
Infinite?
A lot of problems with that game.
Everyone loved that game. Never talked to a single person who didn't think that game was amazing.
Jack, I love that game, but now there's a lot of...
What?
Yeah, Jack, there's a lot of people that don't like many of the politics of that game.
Oh, that's the point. You're not supposed to like the politics.
I
you're supposed to hate everything about the politics.
That game has pretty much been canceled.
What?
Dude, I don't know if you didn't know that. Whedon. BioShock Infinite has
been canceled.
The whole
point is
also
that you despise everything about it. It's a commentary.
I like BioShock Infinite. I should have you edit this out. I love that game, but it's not the. It's most. A lot of people do not like the game anymore.
Okay, regardless of the politics, the ending was really cool.
Yeah, the ending's really sad, and it's really moving. And I was more moved by BioShock Infinite than any fucking Assassin's Creed game has moved me. I'll admit that freely, but. I tried again with the fourth one, which was the pirate one, I think, right? I don't remember if it was the pirate one first or the one where it's in the American, like, Revolution.
So I think it's American but Revolution those two games into a pirate one. Because he's, like, a
okay,
part
I think
of it,
right.
And then
three
he's
and
like,
four. Yeah.
All right,
I played
I'm
the
out.
Pirate one recently, and that's the one where the whole fucking game was just one really long tutorial. So they add a new complex mechanic every single mission.
The pirate run to current, you no longer play Desmond Miles. You're just playing some random person in the Animus. Like, you don't have a name or anything. The third one, like, wrapped up the storyline.
Or did it?
This one, Uprising, also features Desmond Miles, but he's a little clone boy that they're hiding in a cell.
It's awesome. So that brings me to... first off, the common thread between these two is Arcadia, the Animus. We both have death and simulations, mixed post-death simulations going on.
I got more thoughts about Assassin's Creed that I'm about to lay out big time. So is 2 right, the one right. that's in Italy, or is that 3?
Yes, 2 is
so
the one
like
in Italy.
So like one, yeah,
they're in Greece?
They're in like ancient... Persia, almost, or something, it felt like. So, anyways, so I remember playing 1, and it was like, I got a sci-fi hook, but mostly I'm about old-school killing. And it was frustrating, but rewarding at times, right? There's some cool shit
in it. When you nail
the
assassinations, they're pretty sick.
So then I
really liked
Hitman,
too, though.
The first one, you're Altair. The second one, you're Ezio.
So I pick up number 2. I get excited. I'm meeting Leonardo da Vinci. I'm doing some cool weirdo shit, right? Like,
you're tracking pervert priests.
Flashing forward to the present time, and I'm running away in a warehouse or whatever. And then, like, there's that big overall idea of, like, oh, yeah, the Apple of Eden was actually some, like, fucking ancient alien shit. So we're not just sci-fi. We're conspiracy, too. So I'm like, all right, I'm in. And then they drop me in the town, and the town's all turned to shit, and they say, hey, Ezio, I know that you're doing a lot of cool shit about, like, killing people, but do you think you can, like, run our town and we'll, like, do cool stuff for you? And I was like, I don't want to play a city manager game. I showed up to this game for the weird sci-fi shit and, like, sometimes killing people coolly. I'm out. I couldn't maintain. And then that whole shit about, like, pick up the money that the business made to fund your own thing. And I was like, oh, neat. But if you don't pick it up in, like, 3 days, it just restarts at zero. They keep it. And I'm like, I'm not going to come back to the town every 3 fucking days to just pick up money. I'm supposed to go out there and kill these dudes before they wreck the whole earth. So it's frustrating. And then that's when I stopped playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now every time I see one come out, it feels like the Fast and the Furious franchise, where, like,
there's so many.
I really want to be a part of the world that everybody lives in that is like, hell yeah. I guess a closer example to home for me is when Diablo 3 and Max Payne 3 came out on the same night, and me and my best friend went to GameStop to pick it up at midnight or, like, whatever time it was releasing. And we're waiting outside in line. We'd paid it off. And they come out and they ask, who's excited for Diablo 3? And the whole fucking line goes nuts. And then they're like, and for Max Payne 3. And I was like, it's our time, Max Payne fans. And I was like, hell yeah. Along with one other guy. So, like, I really wanted to be in the Diablo 3 crowd. I really want to be in the Assassin's Creed world or the Fast and the Furious world. But I'm not. And I know that everybody's having fun in the house with the cool games about being a pirate or a Grecian fucking murderer or a fucking badass Viking, I guess, in this new one where you run around to England and fucking pillage the shit out of people. Like, it seems cool as hell. Yeah, I can't grab it, you know?
Yeah. Every time one comes out, my friends that are, like, really into video games tells me it's the best one. Like, for, like, the one, you know, Origins, where it's in Egypt, they really like that one. But then that one came out that's, like, God of War, you know, set in, like,
I think it's, like,
Roman or Greek mythology. I forget what it's called. Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Odyssey came out, and my friend's like, that's the best one that's ever been out. And I'm like, oh, cool. I love Greek mythology. Maybe this is the one I'll come in on. And then I was debating about getting it from GameStop when it was used, and then I just didn't have time because life. And then the new one came out, the Vikings one, and everyone's like, Valhalla. And everyone's like, it's the best one ever. And I'm like, maybe they got better? Because I assume.
I've always thought it's weird when games.
Ubisoft.
Like, randomly go to Egypt, ancient Egypt, and then, like, randomly go to Viking land. And it's like.
Literally the like only one where that
Nazi
makes
zombies
sense.
Did that. Like, oh, it is, yeah. But still, it's, like, kind of weird that, like, these assassins are, like, hanging out with Vikings and shit. I don't know. But it's cool. I like that it, like, ties history from all over the world into the series. And it's, like, such a huge fucking experience for the people who are into it. Like,
I just want to know, and I've always been tempted to Google it, and I guess I don't really want to know, but I'm just going to say it out loud because maybe one of our listeners knows. Did they resolve that shit with, like, the alien artifact and, like, the other race of whatever that was? Like, their whole quest was,
yeah,
like,
that's resolved in the third one,
that's
I think.
It? And so now they just make them for fun?
That's it. Now it's just, you're literally just, like, a faceless husk playing yourself.
You're not, like, chasing down patient 21 to find some cool fucking
there's no
2 second long snippet that plays on a video
there's
wall.
No modern day story anymore. Yeah, no, there's no modern day story since the
you know what would be awesome.
You're just,
are you ready for this? Okay, so I just literally said I spent a long time exposing myself as, like, not a fan of the Assassin's Creed world. I desperately want to be, but I just don't have the fucking interest to be. Here's my pitch for a really good Assassin's Creed game. Are you ready?
Yeah.
You're Desmond Miles. You fucking wake up. Turns out 3 just ended. Now you've got the shit or whatever, I don't know. Whatever happens at the end of 3. But you're Desmond Miles and you're fucking running all over the world doing cool, like, Nathan Drake stuff.
That should have been the fourth game.
But that's not it.
Yeah.
The fourth game ends. It looks like you fucking saved everything. But it turns out you're the future version playing the fucking Desmond Miles past who went into an animus that goes back to the past.
That's a fucking game. Yeah, that's a game. Yeah. That should have been the fourth one.
And then once
one.
You
like,
realize that, you could do cheat codes day. Like the Matrix.
Oh. That would be sick.
And that's Assassin's Creed 7. And then in 8, it turns out you're actually just like an amorphous blob from the super future that can do it without the Animus because of the way that humans have evolved over time and whatever the GMOs and junk food and processed oils and all the shit that we're putting into our fish are coming into our bodies. So now we like interface directly, but we're also still attached to our humanity, but at the cost of like our shape and form. And then you have like a Sackboy adventure where you like seal yourself up in a suit and you're traversing this fucking super foreign alien landscape where like nothing makes sense because nothing needed form anymore. And that one's 8. But then in 9,
that sounds amazing.
Actually turns out that that was like a fake thing that somebody created. So you're not as far in the future as you thought, but one of your ancestors was like, this is a really good idea. And he had a super vivid imagination. So he like just imagined all that shit. And it turns out that you've been playing like a daydream that he had instead of a memory. So you come out of the Animus and they're like, what did you learn? And you're like, fucking humanity was weird. And they're like, did you not graduate history? Fucking, that never happened. Why would you think that was the past? And he's just like, I was so lost in the illusion. And then he dies, but it turns out that he had the thing inside him all along that was needed. So then in 10, they got to figure out time travel, and then they actually just go back to those eras. So you replay the games from an outside perspective. So like you're watching Altair in the first one assassinate people, but in the background you're like secretly picking off people who would have killed him. And you never knew that in Assassin's Creed 1. But it's so fucking sick when you finally get to 10 and you're like, I'm protecting my past self. Maybe I'm in the Animus. And then your game ends, and it turns out that you're the person in the Animus at the beginning of 11. So, like, I can see where these games are, like, the best ever.
That sounds great. Yeah.
Get at me, Hollywood, for video games, Ubisoft employees or executives. I could do this all day.
Ubisoft's going to call you tomorrow.
I love
it. We got to hire you.
How did you know exactly where we have planned for the franchise. Assassin's Creed series? Who fucking told you? Because we're going to kill you and them. And I'll be like, no.
I will. They're too busy producing that Rob McElhenney show for Apple TV
Plus. Oh, yeah.
Mythic Quest, which is good. I will say, though, I love Dan Waters and Alex Pracknell, two of my favorite writers. Love White Noise. And I will say that their book they have, drawn by Jose Holder and lettered by Jimmy Betancourt and colored by Marco Lesko, is the most I've ever enjoyed Assassin's Creed, because as we've all, at least me and Chaz have said, we're not big fans of Assassin's Creed. I thought it had a lot of good action and elements. Charlotte was a strong lead.
I also enjoyed the Michael Fassbender scene from the... I didn't watch the movie Assassin's Creed, but I watched the trailer
seen
for it.
Either. I should.
And I liked when he was like flipping around on the Animus machine that was like one of those VR harnesses. That was the one other thing I liked from Assassin's Creed, the franchise, other than these comics.
Yeah.
And my pitch for Assassin's Creed 7 and up, and the time that I spent playing 1 before I got lost by 2 or 3.
Okay, so going back to the comics, because we've not talked a lot about them. The comics, I like, though, that you could tell Waters and Pacnadel really took their own spin on it, and like they picked up from where other people left off, which was not what I was not expecting, to have them like in the future with like dudes in assassin mechs and like, or like assassin Iron Man suits and like all this
stuff. That's
the
game I want to play.
I know, I was going to say, I would totally play that one.
Anthem and Assassin's Creed.
I wanted to play kind of like Prototype, just like extremely violent sandbox chaos. So I like how they like took their own spin. They made it unique with like, they took the idea of like the ancestral trauma and like going back through bloodlines and all that from the Assassin's Creed series, and did it in a cool way where like the Templars and the or one Templar in particular has to team up with the Assassins to like go against a common threat that's like a third entity. And I don't know if that's been done before in the series, but I thought it was really cool to see like a nice switch up.
Yeah, I think it really demonstrates their ability as writers to take, and I think also Assassin's Creed, the idea of like you're revisiting the memories of your ancestors and you're living out these lives, lends itself just to some pretty good like storytelling material, right? You could tell a story from any era starring any style of character you want by saying it's this person's past self or it's this person's present self, like just juxtaposing them. And I think ancestral trauma is a lot more prevalent just in storytelling than any other theme. So it's definitely, it really highlights that they're able to take, and admittedly, I'm not like, I spent a long time espousing, I'm not a big Assassin's Creed fan, but I did enjoy these reads. So I think it speaks to their talent and their ability in like telling a story that made me feel some of that excitement that I sometimes long for.
I think
people talk about the new release or
kind of like a Tarantino film, like the dialogue and banter is the best part. Like the story is cool. There's cool action, but my favorite part was just listening to these assassins talk to each other and give each other shit. And I really liked how much one of the assassins wanted to bring guns along. And it was like a whole reoccurring thing through each battle where he's like, why the hell don't we use guns? Because it's true, like, why would the assassins not use guns in the modern day and age? Isn't a silenced pistol like the number
that's
one?
Kiyoshi, right? The
yes,
Japanese one?
Yes, Kiyoshi.
Yeah. Is Jetsup the name of the guy?
It's
with
like
the
it's like Obi-Wan says, it's like less refined, it's less, you know, like you could,
really,
anybody can
like,
use a blaster, anybody can use a gun. I'm an assassin, it's an art. I've got a blade that comes out when I flick my wrist or whatever. I look like Wolverine's son with only one claw. Like, I don't know.
I enjoyed that Atso is kind of the bad guy, not like as a Templar, but he's kind of trying to stop Juno as well. He's kind of torn in the middle. I enjoyed that aspect of the book. I also liked the slimy Weasley seems to be weak Guernica, who in the beginning is like, I'm just a tech and I'm getting tortured. And then he's like, evil is sin, you find out. And then they're kind of like back and forth on whether they should like dispose of him. I enjoyed that too. It was an enjoyable ride. And it's cool. To me, it really speaks that these guys are nerds. Like, we're going to have Dan on. We've had Alex on. I know they're nerds. But this clearly looks like for hire work they want to talk about just because they probably dig the video games. Not sure, but I can assume that they do. I mean, because like Dan's doing a Cowboy Bebop book for the same company coming out in December for Titan, which it's based off the TV show that's coming out on Netflix, which looks cool. I saw the opening credits this week, and it's literally just the anime opening credits with live action actors, which was actually pretty cool. And then also I saw the Sandman sneak peek that lit the internet on fire that a lot of people did not like. But I thought it looked pretty cool. Yeah, Charles Dance, and it looked just like the comic. Like, it literally looked like the beginning of the comic. Like, yes, Dream does not look like
Holy
Dream.
Holy shit.
And Death does not look like Death. But the story looks like it's exactly the story. And when I'm reading it, when I'm watching an adaptation, what I'm actually wanting to see is the story on screen. So I am much happier with if characters look different, but the story is the same, I'm pretty happy. Like, because my main problem with most adaptations is we'll get it and the story's literally nothing like the story in the comic. A la Lock and Key, a la Sweet Tooth, even though I enjoyed Sweet Tooth, it was just so radically changed the story, even if the characters were pretty dead on, that I don't really mind that the characters look different if it's the story I read in the comic. I'm okay. And they got Boyd Holbrook, who fucking already rules. Boyd Holbrook's the shit, as the Corinthian. I'm all about that casting. I mean, regardless of your other casting qualms with Sandman, I think that looks pretty good. And I also think this is a good time that we jump into the simulated tale of Arcadia, which
if we do, you're going to miss out on my holy shit. Like when I said holy shit, when we confirmed that it was Charles Dance, I had Googled Charles Dance. And he is pretty ripped for 73, I gotta tell you.
What?
The first Google image search when you do Charles Dance is like him coming out of the ocean with his partner, and like I'm not saying he's like cut. But like, for 73, he's looking pretty fit.
Oh my god, yeah.
Oh, there's another picture. Is that his wife? Where he's like wearing a tank top. Damn, he looks like he's a biker who's gonna beat my ass.
He's just making out with some chick that looks 20 years younger than him in the ocean.
Yeah, it's an Italian film producer, it looks like. Anyways,
Ex-Gucci acknowledge, model, Shambhala Mark.
Is like looking pretty.
He's also been hooking up with Sophia Miles, who's only like in her early 30s. He's dating Sophia Miles and Shambhala Mark.
What?
This guy's a fucking Charles Dance.
You know,
Google Sophia Miles right now. Charles Dance is hitting that. What?
That's wild.
Yeah.
Google Sophia Miles right now. Like, you have to Google and see. The Charles Dance is hitting
Do y'all remember?
Charles Dance is tapping.
That Charles Dance?
I should not say that. Charles Dance is making sweet love.
Yeah, probably.
That woman.
Something respectful.
I don't know if it's sweet if there's two of them.
Ali G in the house. Y'all remember that?
What?
Charles Dance was the bad guy of Ali G in the house?
I remember that.
Yeah.
And the bad guy in Last Action Hero.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's like his best role, easily.
Sophia Miles was once linked to Johnny Depp, and she posted an old picture. Now she's with Charles Dance. Leveled up? Yeah.
I guess Charles Dance is, maybe? Real baller. So.
Charles, I mean, I don't want to be rude, but I think Charles Dance might slay the pipe.
anyway.
This is the most surprising Google search that I've
Sometimes you just gotta throw a name in there when you're curious about what they've been up to, and then you get rewarded like this. You get rewarded with a buff 73-year-old.
That's hooking up with woman 40 years younger than him. Charles, you dog.
So, I wanted to mention earlier and spaced. This is kind of completely unrelated, but you were talking about the Diablo 3 crowd. And, dude, they've been leaking. Yeah. They've been, putting out a bunch of info on, the new classes and shit for Diablo 4. And it looks sick. They're bringing, all the Diablo 2 classes back. And also, they, put Diablo 2 on Xbox One now, which is really cool. Gonna buy it for sure when it comes out.
That is cool. And then also coming out next week is one of my favorite games of all time, the remaster of Alan Wake, comes out next week. So I'm real pumped for that. And it's only $20. So yeah, y'all should get it. That's a great game. And I'm assuming that means Alan Wake 2, since you find out Control is literally only happens because Alan Wake has summoned that girl there to come rescue him. I don't know if anyone played Control, which is an awesome game, but then once you get the DLC, the whole situation with all the creatures inside the building was created by Alan Wake because he's trapped inside the lake and needs help. And then she realizes at the end, so I can only assume that we're going to get Alan Wake 2 in a Control sequel. So that's cool. So I'm pumped about that. Also, real quick before we get into Arcadia, the trailer for Licorice Pizza came out this week. I don't know if you guys are PTA fans. I'm a big PTA fan.
I watched it four fucking times just today. Cool scene.
Hot Cooper.
Sorry.
Yeah, it looks so good.
I'm really excited.
You know what I did
have
to Google? Because I was very Alana Haim, she's not a teenager. Because Haim came out 10 years ago almost. And then I looked it up and she's 30. And I was like, I don't know if they're doing it because she's young looking. Because Cooper Hoffman is not even 18 yet. So it's very much I think she's playing older in it though. I don't know if she's playing older or playing younger. I'm not sure, but it looks really good.
I imagine I was just a year or two older. Because
I was very confused
pretty big.
I was just very confused because was she 10 or 10 when the first Time album came out and just looked really old? And then
no,
I think
I think it was like a Oompa. Okay. It was like what's that? Hanson.
Her sisters were in their late 20s and she was just hitting the drums and I look 22, but I'm 10.
Classic.
But Licorice Pizza looks great. It's got Bradley Cooper playing John Peters, the famous John Peters, or the famous Kevin Smith story about John Peters wanting a giant spider in Superman. that John Peters, and you see him playing John Peters and destroying a bunch of cars at a used car dealership while dancing with hammers. So, I mean, one, that looks amazing. Two, I cannot believe that they haven't been sued by John Peters yet, who is very famously litigious. I mean, is John Peters going to freak out about this movie? I hope we can see it. I know that Paul Thomas Anderson has been like crazy big on it only being in 70mm. So hopefully theaters out here will have it.
I'll fucking go out of my way. I don't care.
Oh, I would love to see that movie. That's my favorite living director. Yeah. It's cool to see him kind of go back to Boogie Nights mode. And it's just a story about San Fernando Valley. It's the reason Alana Haim's in it, because she was born and raised in San Fernando Valley. Pretty much everyone in the movie besides Cooper Hoffman was born and raised. Even Bradley Cooper is from San Fernando Valley. The only reason Cooper Hoffman's in it is to kind of, you know, pass on to Philip Seymour Hoffman's, you know, his heritage, since Philip Seymour Hoffman would kind of started off in Paul Thomas Anderson movies. And I think that's really cool, just taking some kid that's never acted before being like, your dad was in all my movies. He passed away. Would you like to be the star of my new movie? And like, he looks like he acts well in it too, which is cool. I'm sure PTA kind of was like, I'm going to turn you into a star, kid. And he definitely looks like his dad, kind of. But he definitely has the face of his father. His hair's a little darker. But I'm super pumped for that.
Sick.
Plus, Sean Penn, Tom Waits, Maya Rudolph, Benny Safdie.
Yeah, Tom Waits. Yeah. Maya Rudolph. Benny Safdie. Benny Safdie plays like a lawyer or something in it. Maya Rudolph is Paul Thomas Anderson's wife. Did you know that?
Yeah, common law or something. They've been together for like 20 years.
Yeah. That's a great couple right there. Mm-hmm. Which, I know that like a few years ago, my friends lived in LA. They went to like a screening of Boogie Nights in San Fernando Valley, and he actually came and like hung out with everyone and took questions. And I'm like, that's fucking cool.
That's like, super cool.
Yeah, I would totally just gush. I'd be like, I didn't look at the score yet. I think he might be having someone else to score it instead of Johnny Greenwood, but I might be wrong. I could look it up right now, actually.
Yeah, Johnny Greenwood.
Awesome. Yeah, awesome. Johnny Greenwood's scores have just been fantastic from there. Getting in now to Arcadia, which was Alex Pachnedel's first major release, which is crazy. It's written by Alex Pachnedel. It is drawn, lettered. No, it is drawn, colored by Eric Scott Pfeiffer,
and inked,
obviously, and then lettered by Colin Bell. Yeah, it looks great. Especially, like, I read this originally digitally a few years ago, and I have the physical copy now, and physical is just the best. Like, the art looks so much better physical. And, like, kind of, like, the large landscapes. But it's set in a world, again, the plot real quick, we're very familiar world now, because we're dealing with coronavirus, where a papillomavirus has destroyed pretty much the entire world. It's killed 6 billion people. And they basically took the consciousness of all 6 billion people and uploaded them into this computer program called Arcadia. Our main character is Lee Pepper, who is of the meat and is living in Alaska, I believe, right? Is it Alaska or Antarctica? It's Alaska, right?
Mm-hmm. Let
me double check. It's the very beginning. Yeah, he's living in Alaska.
Somewhere north
and
cold.
Like north and cold, and it's like where the hard drive of Arcadia is. It's where everyone's consciousness is stored and being uploaded into the computer system. And he is immune to the P virus. I was going to call it. He is immune to the P virus.
Gross.
And he is the papillomavirus. Oh, God. I just don't want to keep pronouncing that. He's immune to the virus. And inside Arcadia, he communicates with his daughter, because his daughter and wife and their son, who's a big part of the story, are in there. And so is he, because his family does not know, except his daughter, that he didn't die. And he has a simulated version of himself, which is his real name, Lee Garner. And basically, the story is mostly focused on the politics, because the people in Arcadia, they have natural-born Arcadians now, are fighting for their human rights from the meat, from the humans. And then some, basically, pieces of the Arcadia start dying. People start dying. Because usually, if you die in Arcadia and you're one of the consciousnesses in there, you come back right back to life if you die. Like, it starts off with his daughter, Coral, flying, killing herself, and then coming right back to life. But now something's killing Arcadians, and they're not coming back. They're not regenerating. And besides the politics, you know, the arguments between Benetti and the president and Lee, there's also them trying to discover why Arcadia is eating itself. Benetti thinks it is the meat, the humans. But really, it's something else. And it's really kind of a story of these politics and then them discovering the mystery. But I really love this story. I will say it is a like smarter man's Matrix. It really handles politics in the real world well, with also kind of going back in the simulation and handling like the devastation of a pandemic.
Yeah. Pandemics are pretty devastating, as we found out.
Yes, yeah. We haven't uploaded everyone into the Arcadia system yet, thank God.
Yeah, I think this book...
What'd you guys think of this book?
It asks a really nice question, I think. Well, like, I shouldn't say nice question, but it asks and attempts to answer, like, what's the price for paradise? Right? Like, they saved 4 billion people who are all stored on these servers. Yeah, exactly. I mean, for all intents and purposes, what is our body?
Yeah, are they still like, people?
Nothing but what we physically feel the world with. And what's even the world?
Are,
right?
Our like, minds just a computer?
What exists behind you right now? You know what I mean? Like, you can't fucking see behind you. I have a little screen in front of me that shows me what's behind Michael. It shows me what's blurred out behind me. But, like, we fucking don't know. So, like, they're saved. But, like, at what cost? How much does that cost to power and to run? You know what I mean? If the machines didn't take over in the Matrix, who would pay for all that shit? So, like, like you said, the politics of this, I think, are really what drive the story. But the interactions and the world of Arcadia, I think, is just, like you said, a much better realized version of the Matrix. Because the idea of almost anybody being aware, everybody, really, being aware that, like, they're in a simulation and that constraints don't apply to them. There's a lecture hall scene that's really good where the lecturer talks
with the
about,
teacher.
Like,
yeah.
What if they just are never raised knowing that gravity exists? What if they aren't, like, aware that time passes forward, that they can experience these things? Their mind can now actually physically, because it's not being forced upon them by any outside constraint, like, realize these ideas. It's really cool.
It's really cool, and it's a great debate of the Arcadians saying that, you know, they're the ones really alive now and the meat are the ones dead, because really on the physical plane of existence there's not much left.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even when there's a great scene later in the book when you go through LA and it's like deserted and cops have become literally Mad Max warriors and they're having to give them guns to pass through and go into the Staples Center. It looks like we've lost Jack. His internet went down.
I don't know.
But, yeah. We have lost an aesthetic. He does live in the boonies, and his internet's went down. So it's okay. We can finish this. But I really like that debate as well. The politics and definitely like the arguments and them kind of coming to an agreement is definitely what drew me to the story more than the mystery. Though I do like the resolution, the mystery jumping ahead, and I like how strangely Alex weaves in the Winchester Mystery Mansion story into the plot, which is like completely cool and a nerdy thing. I mean, definitely when he comes back on, I'm going to bring up how I was raised right near that. I used to go to it all the time, and how I wonder if he's actually visited Santa Clara and been there in San Jose and actually gone to see Sarah Winchester's mansion, or if he's just a fan because it's so notorious. But even this little inclusion is so much better than that movie Winchester, which, man, we tried to watch it. That shit's nuts.
What was the movie?
The movie's with Jason Clarke and Helen Mirren. Helen Mirren plays Sarah Winchester.
How was it bad?
And he goes there to find out if the ghosts are true. Because it's not historical at all. Let me tell you. The plot is about him going there to see if ghosts are true. His wife killed herself because she saw ghosts. And he's a drug addict now, and he doesn't believe in ghosts. So then he goes there, and he starts to fall in love with, like, Sarah's niece, who has a kid. For some reason, Sarah Winchester didn't have all these family members there, but there's a bunch of family members living there. And, like, he starts falling in love with the niece, who's the girl from Succession, and then Sarah Shahi. And then I think that's her name. I might be wrong. There's two Sarahs.
Yeah.
That might have been her name. But anyway, the girl from Succession.
Yeah.
But the redhead from Succession. But and then there's, like, he keeps, like, communicating to people that might be ghosts. There's this one waiter ghost. So there's, like, killer ghost out. And his wife's a ghost and trying to warn him. And he's finally starting to have faith. And then he keeps on seeing... The one good twist is he keeps on speaking to this one ghost, like, kind of, like, throughout it, that's, like, a waiter. And that ends up being the serial killer ghost who's, like, some soldier that went nuts with Sarah Winchester's guns. And then it literally just becomes, like, a fight with the ghost at the end where they're, like, fighting and they're learning how to use magical bullets against ghosts.
The main fucking other character is a ghost?
Sarah Snook, that's her name. Sarah Snook, sorry.
It says that it's revealed that Eric has had actually been shot and killed by a Winchester rifle before revived. So he's like,
oh, that's the main character. He's not dead, though. He was shot by his wife. She shot him and then shot herself. And then that's what connects him, is because it was by a Winchester rifle. And that's why his wife is also a ghost there, because she shot herself with a Winchester rifle. Right. So basically anyone killed with a Winchester weapon is a ghost at the mansion. And then what's the guy? Yeah, Ben Block. That guy is the main like serial killer ghost. And you originally just think he's some weird waiter, but then he ends up being this crazy soldier. And it literally ends with them like finding out how to use bullets that can kill ghosts.
I mean,
it was nominated for Golden Raspberries.
It was a film. It's also
It's also just weird because like the Winchester Mystery House. We've gone down a Winchester Mystery House tangent now. It's okay. Jack's gone. We got to make it work. It's weird that the Winchester Mystery House is standing. They could have shot the entire movie there. They shot like there for one day for outside, and the rest is just in Australia and some set they built. And like you can clearly tell, it's not San Jose, like in the movie. Like, it's just straight Australia. Like you're like, this isn't the Winchester Mystery House. What the fuck? And I don't know if that was like, budgetary reasons.
I feel like it was more like the director of photography got tired of getting lost inside the house and was like, I'm done with this. I'm not gonna open up another door that leads to fucking stairs to nowhere. I'm trying to track this shot.
Yeah, we gotta build a set. But back on the book, it's really interesting. I really like the kind of the conversation that's going on with Lee, and how Lee in the simulation made Giacomo and then erased his wife's memories, and then his wife's just so pissed because she thought they had this son that it kind of becomes the crux of the whole story and can fix Arcadia because he's literally born of Arcadia, and he becomes, there's like these cool characters that are like the shamans of the digital age, which are natural born Arcadians that get to kind of literally change the system, like kind of a Matrix, like Neo. They could change anything they want. Like when the soldiers are attacking that lecture, I like that he comes out. I gotta look up his name.
But he looks like the Vitruvian man.
Coral's love interest.
Yeah, and then he reaches out through the Vitruvian wall man and the opens wall. Like a portal. Out.
Yeah, it's it radical. Seems like that are awesome. And how Glimmers, the like unconstructed people of Arcadia, are like drug addicts, and they're melting, and they do these radical drug tests on the virus to become physical for small amounts of times until that goes horribly wrong because Arcadia is not going right because of the twist that is happening, because really no one should be in Arcadia.
I really liked the fact that like, it felt like there were more people inside Arcadia that knew what was happening outside of Arcadia. Like a lot of times in these worlds, there's this like lack of awareness that they are not just that they're in a simulation, but that there is outside forces that could turn them off at any time. Right. Like if you could be uploaded into Arcadia as it exists in this book, like let's say before the sun is born, right? Like, In Arcadia Prime, right? But there's that knowledge that tomorrow somebody might decide it's too expensive to run and just turn it off. Like, do you take it?
Yeah.
I would. Yeah, I would super.
That's a huge conversation. Like, what kind of disrupts Panetti in the president's talk is she wants them to turn off for 8 hours a day, like a normal sleep cycle, so they can save money. And they don't want to because it's literally their whole world.
And they don't. Well, I mean, imagine you turn it off, you turn it back on. What happens? Like,
yeah, it's like
do you reboot to your like last time they backed you up? Like the first time you got uploaded, do you miss out on all that memory or whatever? Like, nobody knows. I've turned off a computer and lost everything I was working on unintentionally.
Yeah, multiple times I've done that too.
But yeah, I think
maybe you want to do that as your whole existence,
right? I'd gamble on it because. That's a existence as it stands right now, right? But without the promise of like, I could do cool shit because I realize it's a simulation. I want to fly to fucking work every day. Sure, Here I go.
Hell yeah.
Just gone or whatever.
Or if you're like, hi me, teleport literally all over the world. Or even like as Giacomo, when he gets literally dropped to like the bottom of the simulation, which is cool. You get to see it from like the disk drive down. Also great seeing this is when there's a physical Bitcoin mine and then the huge snake creature comes out of it. Really,
it was
like,
awesome.
Sky Pfeiffer, yeah, is creating some really cool visuals on here. Like one of the most thought-provoking cyberpunk stories in the last 10 years, definitely. And crazy debut. Like, I think this is the first thing Pachnidel really released. It's astounding. And the fact he's really kind of one of the cutting-edge writers for cyberpunk and tech books today. He's doing it right now at Giga. I'm really excited to see what he's getting more Marvel gigs. Hopefully, we could talk about it. And he's got more TKO stuff coming up too, which I'm excited for all that, especially because I like seeing him dip more into horror. I really enjoyed Rev Fork, and that was kind of the first time I got to see him do not tech-based stuff that's really kind of like just gritty horror, and I really enjoyed that.
Was it Roof Stompers? The like
Roof I haven't read Roof Stompers yet.
Oh,
I want to. Is it good?
It's like horror sci-fi. It's pretty solid. Yeah.
That's awesome. Is that the one with Hickman drawing? Jen Hickman?
I think so. It was pretty solid.
And he has two out from their shorts. I know one's with Jen Hickman drawing. She's one of my favorite artists right now. Artist of Lonely Receiver.
Let's see. That one was Ian McEwen.
Ian McEwen? Okay.
Yeah.
He's another good artist. He does a lot of Kickstarter, someone else I'm familiar with. Jen Hickman's the other. I think Jen Hickman's the Till Death Do Us Part, whatever it's called, or Something to Bear. It's the
hand
one he did.
Down.
I don't remember.
No, it's Hand Me Down. Hand Me Down. Yeah. Demonic Possession.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like the sweetest one.
I need to get those shorts.
Yeah. It was like a... like one of those like Twilight Zone episodes that ends real wholesome and you're like, oh, you didn't pull the rug out from under me and show me how miserable existence was. You showed me that even in bad times, there's good or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. That's always refreshing. But it's just a good introduction. There's so many different themes he's wrestling with in politics of just how a simulation would actually work, especially in the face of tragedy.
Oh, man.
I love Valentin, the Russian that's there with Lee that everyone knows is a mole. But he's still like one of the most helpful people to Lee. Even though everyone knows he's just spying for the Russians. definitely one of my favorite characters.
Oh, the world building definitely was insane in this. Like, you know, all of the like sci-fi tech that he came up with and like words and terms and lingo for stuff. And like, I don't know, just everything about it. The style and aesthetic. It was like chef kisses. I can't do it without the visuals, so I'm just saying it.
No worries. completely original and groundbreaking work for his first book. And like, I like how you get to see like the Mad Max world and the very sci-fi world of Arcadia. And even though I like the politics more, I think the mystery story and its resolution, like the fact that basically Sarah Lancaster, who's like Sarah Winchester, except she's not Sarah Winchester, that Arcadia was designed for her, and she's become this burning lady inside of the system, which is kind of eating itself because literally all these billions of people are invasive because the system was designed just for her. So Lee made the mistake of uploading 6 billion consciousness into something that was only supposed to support one, which is what is causing all the madness in the book. Yeah.
That's just Earth in a nutshell, ain't it?
Yeah. Supposed to have a few people. Now there's 6 billion. Shit.
Bring on the flood.
Yeah.
Get the boat, Noah.
Very good.
Well, I don't think Earth was meant
very
for
good,
even one person. I think it just happened.
Yeah, that might be true too.
Yeah. No, there's way too many.
Papa
well,
Cosmos.
Oh, actually,
too,
you know what I realized was like it's almost like an analogy, maybe intentionally, maybe not, that the it's almost like a virus coming into the simulation to like cut down the world population because there's too many and they're destroying the Arcadia, just like pandemics come to thin down the human population as we destroy the planet.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's.
I don't know
why
I didn't realize that before. I think that was probably intentional.
I mean, I hope so.
Yeah. If not, it was a happy accident.
Otherwise, Yeah.
I know Pac Nadell, last time we had him on, said a lot of times people read more into his stories than he intended, and it's awesome. So
I think that's with a lot of writers, which is good, because we get to put our own spin on
totally
things.
Yeah.
Into it.
We're definitely overloading the system as humans.
Oh, we have been for a long time. I would say not to spoil it, but I think the ending's kind of heartfelt and sweet too, and pretty emotional. At least how Lee's journey ends, without completely spoiling it. I was very happy with the resolution.
Yeah.
To me, it's very crazy to have love for a son you never really knew or had in another version of you created, but then kind of really touches on the last scene of the book.
Yeah.
Which I quite enjoyed. Yeah,
you can definitely grow to love anyone, really. Well, I don't know about anyone, but you know.
Yeah.
you grow to love
Hitler,
anything.
He had his problems, but he really was a nice vegetarian.
I really did grow to love those comic skaters.
Yeah, I really did go to think that.
No.
See, I completely blocked his name now. I don't even remember. Ethan Van Shiver. He has his issues, but gotta love him anyway, right? He's just a little bit of a hate monger. Okay. He's just terrorizing women.
No, you can.
There's some good in him.
You can definitely grow to love a lot of people. Just not necessarily anyone.
Here, I thought the hottest take of the recording was going to be my Assassin's Creed confession. I'm glad you boys were able to get something off your chest.
We're just kidding.
Assassin's Creed, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Do you guys remember in 2014 or 2013 when someone on the internet went and posted a bunch of, because Taylor Swift is a vegetarian and so is Adolf Hitler, was Adolf Hitler, and someone took a bunch of images of Taylor Swift and put Hitler quotes about being a vegetarian on Taylor Swift pictures. And they spread all over Tumblr, Twitter, and Facebook. And then people realized they weren't Taylor Swift quotes. They were all Adolf Hitler quotes. It's what caused the nickname Swiftler, or whatever was going on. But some major troll released a bunch of Adolf Hitler quotes about being a vegetarian on Taylor Swift pictures.
That's fucking hilarious.
People did not catch on for at least a week after they went out.
And these things are how we now have QAnon. No, I'm just kidding. That's just fucking hilarious.
Man, imagine when Carcadia gets their QAnon. Oh Jesus. God.
that would be a faction that would be like, this is the real world. The meat, whatever you say that is, we're the meat. And then somebody would fly and they'd be like, I've never seen that happen before in my life. Isolated incident.
Yeah.
Nobody in my family
flies. We're supposed to fly.
I love...
The virus isn't real!
So I just wanted to show my love and appreciation for the homesteaders, because they've got such a badass vibe going. They're nomadic, shamanic people who are doing sorcery magic, but they're essentially just hacking their reality using reciting code.
Awesome.
Yeah,
shit.
Dude, it's so sick. Yeah. Definitely got that Neuromancer vibe.
Neuromancer. Neuromancer, yeah. I don't know why I'm saying Necromancer. That's Rising Dead. Neuromancer is a great book.
Well, it's kind of a playoff Necromancer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super sick.
Great William Gibson vibes. Yeah, I definitely feel like Frank Udell, we can ask him, was inspired for Gibson on this and probably some of his other works. Is this a solid cyberpunk tale? Which they don't come often, as a cyber... I mean, fuck, this is way better, in my opinion, than Cyberpunk... The video game. I mean, the video game's good, but it's got some crazy glitches even after the many...
This book has some crazy glitches too, but they're part of the story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're intentional, though. I don't have to go back and fight a boss again because I accidentally ran out too quick and I left my buddy behind and I can't get back.
Can I go back to the Assassin's Creed? The one thing that I was kind of bummed about in the end was that the boss fight against Juno, the goddess who's coming to fuck everyone up and enslave humanity, the boss fight was four panels instead of... I wish it was more an anime boss fight that was three issues of crazy combat and psychological
shit.
There's
also that huge fake out in it too.
It was cool. Yeah. And all the build up, the journey to there was, sick. I just wish the boss fight had a little more meat.
I agree. But Arcadia, it's a great cyberpunk tale. It's incredible first work by a writer, and I'm really excited to now, you know, we only had a little bit of Waters this week, but next week we're going to be talking about Limbo, which is one of Dan's first books, one of my favorite books, so really excited about that, because Dan and Alex are two of my favorite writers, and Dan really is who drew me to the rest of White Noise, so I'm really glad we get a deep dive in more of his work besides Coffin Bound. But Assassin's Creed, enjoyable. To me, more enjoyable than any of the video games. Arcadia, great first work and one of the best modern cyberpunk tales. Eric Scott Pfeiffer also is delivering some incredible art. Do you guys have anything else you want to include about either books or Arcadia itself?
I think we did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I gotta say, both gripping tales from two very solid writers.
I want to say that I love, I don't know if you guys went into this when my internet died, I loved the, like, almost kind of reminded me of, like, Animal Farm or Moss or something. Mouse, Moss. How, like, the representation of, like, the shinies and the poor are, like, falling apart, you know? Like, the visualization of the different classes. And, like, I think that was great.
How the Glimmers are like the homeless people in LA, and they're like having to beg on the freeway, and then like literally homeless people in LA who like sell their blood all the time, which I know because you see like outlines outside LA blood banks of homeless people selling their blood to survive. Here they're like doing horrible tests with the familovirus.
Well, there's a lot of those like testing jobs too, where like a lot of homeless people will take, where you can go in. Like take experimental drugs and stuff to like for like some quick cash.
But even in a perfect simulated reality, it's pretty wild that there's like,
I wouldn't call it perfect.
Invisible. Well, yeah, but like let's just say it's approximating the real world in a way where there should theoretically, other than memory, not be anybody who is on the fringes of society.
Anymore. Totally.
There should not have been any homeless people.
That's humanity.
Glimmers.
They're all fighting over data instead of money. And that dude who had a Bitcoin hidden under his tongue. That was awesome. Wild stuff.
What are we currently reading? Me, I've kind of been going, wanting to get currently reading. I'm really excited for tomorrow because we got Inferno, we got the Ha Ha trade. So I finally get to read issue 5,
EC, which I'm real pumped about, and just the whole experience
itself.
Oof.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I've been waiting.
Are you going in the morning? Am I going to see you, or are you going later in the afternoon?
Nah, I got more tests and stuff tomorrow, so I can't go until like this weekend probably. Once school wraps up. So I've been pretty behind, but like a hot minute ago I grabbed a Fire Punch. Like the first four volumes of Fire Punch when they were like a couple bucks on Viz for digital. So I've been reading that in my downtime. That's pretty fucking insane. It's so crazy. Like it's wilder and darker than Chainsaw Man. If you could believe that.
That's wild.
Crazy. Yeah.
My man. Let's go.
And I read A Man and His Cat. And that was probably the last comic I read in a while, and then I just got a buddy of mine's Kickstarter finally came in. I got the physicals for they're blurred out, that's how good they are, they're too intense, but Tomb of the White Horse was the original one.
Awesome.
And then Tomb of the Red Horse is the new one, but it's
those look badass.
Yeah, they're pretty, I'll let you borrow them, they're pretty sick. It's got like a biblical Lovecraftian horror meets like biblical mythology of the apocalypse, and then some other wild shit. It's pretty sick. But Ian Monrick,
pretty awesome,
pretty cool dude. Sometimes he listens to our show, so if he hears this, we'll get him on. We'll get him on eventually.
That I love that. All about Kickstarters, and I don't back as many anymore because I have a baby. But I definitely sometimes get drawn in.
Yeah,
especially the cyberpunk Kickstarters always get me. And anything involved by like creators I love. So I you know what's weird? I can't even remember my new issues I read last week, but which is my brain. But I did read I Breathe the Body Again, which is one of my favorite books of the year. I really like how Zach Thompson mixes like Cronenberg, uses Cronenberg kind of body horror into our dependence on the internet, which he's done a really good job of that recently with that and Lonely Receiver. I also read him and Lonnie Nather's first really big book, The Dregs, which is incredible, and it's a noir starring a homeless guy investigating homeless people being eaten in Vancouver by the rich, and it's just it's just real damn good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and then it's awesome. I really want to talk about it one day. It's a crazy good debut. Like, it's just saying so much. I didn't know they both were Vice writers, or used to work for Vice for freelance, which makes a lot of sense now with kind of the subtext of a lot of their stories. And I also did read Scout's Honor again, which, damn, I like that book a lot. Like, I didn't realize how much when I was reading the digital, but reading it together as a trade, I really enjoy that David proposed book. It is, and it seems like, I hope it comes back. That's a world I would really wouldn't mind going back into. World building is great on that. Mm-hmm. And then I read, finally, Elliot Rahal is one of my writer I really enjoy. I got to finish Knock 'Em Dead because the trade came out. And that's a crazy fucking book where a guy starts putting dead comedians into his body, which is, the premise alone is fucking nuts. Like, he puts Lenny Bruce's ghost into his body because he's terrible at comedy, and he gets in an accident and it gives him the ability to put dead people in his body. So then he just starts using a priest to summon dead comedians to put in his body so that he's good.
Sounds hilarious.
Yeah, but I read Elliot's first book, which I hadn't read, and it's one of Jorge Fornes' first books called Hot Lunch Special. I really enjoyed it. It's about like a Lebanese family in Minnesota that's involved with the Irish mob, and they're all goofy, and then one of the family members gets killed without too many spoilers, and you got this goofy Lebanese family having to go hardcore and fight these Irish mobsters while they're constantly bickering, and it's just really funny.
That also sounds like wonderful.
Elliot Hall is very good.
Yeah, kind of
Fargo-y. It is wonderful.
It was pretty great.
It is. Yeah. Yeah, it is Fargo-y. And Fornes' art is fucking great. I love seeing him. Even then, one of his earlier works looks fantastic.
You had me at Fargo-y.
Yeah, it's definitely Fargo-y. But that's it for me. I'm real excited for tomorrow. I've got Good Asian, Haha, Party and Pray all coming.
Really excited for Inferno. What you think about Haha, especially that fifth issue. Fifth and sixth.
I'm excited, but too. That I feel like it's going to rank in my top. Like, I already have it in my top list because I'm assuming it's going to be there. And I'm really excited for Good Asian because a lot of my friends have said that's one of their favorite books of the year. And I haven't read any of it yet.
It's hard. So. It's good. But it's like, it's got that real hard noir feel. It's yeah, I like it.
And Party and Pray, I'm excited for because the premise sounds crazy and it's OGN from Steve Orlando. Which, is Steve Orlando gay?
Yeah. Bisexual, I think so. At least.
I bisexual? Think. Yeah. That's cool, though. He's a great writer, but It's about a young serial killer going to gay clubs and acting like he's into old men and then murdering them. And sounds good.
It does.
I'll update you guys after I read it.
I like Steve Orlando. Because even when he does not as good, like, I shouldn't say this. Let me phrase it in the best way possible.
When he swings hard but misses.
Exactly. Yeah. He's always, every time he's up to the plate, anytime he's got something coming out, I know that it's his story. And sometimes it don't connect for me. But that's fine. I'm going to keep trying him because I know that he's like, I never felt like he sold out on me.
I got the Project Patron trade coming. I haven't read it yet, but I've heard great things about that too.
That one looked
told me that's
pretty
really
solid, yeah. I had to drop it when I quit because I didn't have as much money. So I was like, I got to cut some stuff. I'll swing back around on this.
I understand. Well, anyway, we're in the midst now of Waters and Pagnadella's double feature. Next week, we have the lovely Elle, who is not exactly legit on Twitter, coming on to talk about Limbo and Turncoat. And then the week after that, we have an evening with Dan Waters, which Dan's first time on the show. We're excited. I'm slightly nervous, but we're going to talk about Arkham City, his new book, and get to talk a little bit about his career. But we get to talk about that hot book coming out soon, which is real cool that he's coming on to talk about that because that book's getting a lot of heat because of all the first appearances and just because of how wicked it looks with Danny's art. Mm-hmm. And then the week after that, we're going to have an evening with Alex Pagnadello where he gets to come back and blow our minds with his knowledge and probably kind of run the show, which I'm always excited about. And then we have a few more episodes, and then we have our two Halloween specials. We have the Providence Trilogy with Aditya Bidigard coming back, and then we have Department of Truth with Elle on our show, and then we're going to go over to Pink Buzz and continue our Department of Truth talk. So lots of good stuff heading up our way. Halloween's my favorite season, so I'm excited to celebrate it with all of you and get everyone in the mood. Fall's the best. It's already cooler today. It was so nice being outside today in the afternoon. It wasn't terrible. It's only like, we're on our way to better 80, days.
Only like 87 degrees or something.
It felt great with the
pretty
wind.
Pretty nice.
It felt like 60. Yeah. 87 in most places is hot. Here it's like, oh, refreshing.
I might put a jacket on.
Exactly. It's a little breezy.
Yeah.
I've seen my coworkers I work with like on the camera all wearing jackets yesterday. And I was like, why are you wearing jackets? Especially people that are born and raised here. Like, I'm obviously not from here, so it's not cold to me. But people that are like born and raised here, 80, they're like wearing jackets. Yeah, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you again for listening, Page Turners. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe. As always, I am Poet Air. You can find me at Twitter at PoetAir33. You can find the show at Outside The with a 0 instead of an O.
You can find me on Twitter as well at Chaz Simons. Simulated or real, I'm there both ways.
And you can find me at sin_aesthetics on Instagram or Twitter, and Sin Aesthetic on Spotify if you're into bass music.
Get Feral Kid now. It's out.
Yeah.
On most
platforms. My debut album.
Check that music out.
It's pretty lit.
With your ears.
Yeah, peep.
Get it.
Use your earballs.
There we go. That's the words I was looking for.
I'm already contacting my lawyer now for an impending Ubisoft lawsuit. And Chaz?
Turn the page, wash your hands, and finance my pitch for Assassin's Creed 7 through 10.
Those are good ideas. That's how it should go. The blob of the idea specifically has me hooked.
Washing your hands and those ideas for Assassin's Creed are both good ideas.